It's Monday, March 11th, 2024, from Peachfish Productions. It's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Alabama Senator Katie Britt has set up shop in the nation's mental breakfast nook with her State of the Union rebuttal that was delivered as if by Moira Rose on Schitt's Creek while she was in a particularly dramatic mood. Scarlett Johansson played Britt on SNL. And look, if Scarlett Johansson is your stand-in, that ain't bad, right? If you told Katie Britt that one fact alone, hey, Scarlett Johansson's gonna play you, I think she'd sign up for whatever the reason was.
The American dream has turned into a nightmare.
Brett Kavanaugh, he was played by Matt Damon. He's probably pretty psyched about that.
Judge Kavanaugh, are you ready to begin?
Oh, hell yeah.
Ben Stiller, still a charisma upgrade on Michael Cohen, who he played.
Of course, the first time I testified was also under oath. But this time I, like, really mean it.
The satirical takedown kind of is winding up to be an ego boost. Maybe the last really big insult of SNL casting was Chris Farley as Newt Gingrich.
Come on.
What do you got? Hit me.
The balanced budget amendment.
All in favor?
Aye.
Done. Go. Hit me.
Line item veto.
Love it. All in favor?
Aye.
Done. Go. Hit me.
Welfare reform.
Beauty. All in favor?
But you know, Newt did lose about 21 years in that exchange, even if he gained a few pounds. I'd sign on to that if I were him. But as we, and I include myself in this, as we were assessing Senator Britt as a bit of theater criticism, there were actual claims that she was making in her rebuttal that went unchecked for a couple days. Listen to this part about Britt's personal tale of visiting the border after Biden's election and meeting a victim of the cartels down there.
That's where I spoke to a woman who shared her story with me. She had been sex trafficked by the cartels starting at the age of 12.
Sounds like a pretty harsh indictment of the Biden policies, right? Well, it was meant to sound like that, but the crimes that the woman in question experienced weren't during the presidency of Joe Biden. It was during a predecessor. Oh, Donald Trump? No. Oh, Obama? Maybe Biden gets a little bit of the blame for that. No. George W. Bush. That's when the girl was trafficked, asked about this on Fox News. Here was Britt's answer.
But to be clear, the story that you relate is not something that's happened under the Biden administration, that particular person.
I very clearly said I spoke to a woman who told me about when she was trafficked when she was 12. So I didn't say a teenager. I didn't say a young woman, a grown woman, a woman when she was trafficked when she was 12.
Very clear. We should have picked up on those clear, very clear context clues. See, she said woman. A woman is at least 18. And if you start at 12 from 18, that's 6 years. We had to have known that it was at the earliest 6 years ago. Even if she said a woman who was trafficked starting at the age of 12, therefore there's no end date to that designation. Okay. But even so, we should know that Katie Britt would be shocked to learn that anyone would think that that should be considered a criticism of Biden, even though, of course, it was meant to be seen as a criticism of Biden. And then there was another part in her speech where she talked about all of this happening in a third world country. We'd be shocked if it happened in a third world country. Now, by that, she didn't at all mean to imply that it happened anywhere other than a third world country. Wait, you're saying that someone thought it happened in the United States? I wonder why anyone would think that. Here is the exact line that Katie Britt said.
We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. This is the United States of America, and it is past time, in my opinion, that we start acting like it.
So what's the problem, right? Don't you get, again, I bring you back to context. We wouldn't be okay with this happening in a third world country. What, we would? You're saying you'd be okay with it? Also, and we shouldn't even have to go in this detail, but you're obviously stupid enough to think that Katie Britt meant that this happened in the United States, but we did stop using third world country to describe places like Mexico over a decade ago. So when she says we wouldn't be okay with it happening in a third world country, it's because we're not okay with using the phrase third world country. We have to be a lot more sensitive than that. And when she says this is the United States of America, well, it is. She was talking from her kitchen in Alabama. That's the United States. Are you so geographically ignorant? Anyway, it sounds much better when ScarJo says it, and ScarJo, Katie Britt will tell you, has her back. Well, he does. Scarlett Johansson? No, no, no. She means Mike Johnson, who's been scarred by all the negative media coverage. ScarJo, that's what they call him. That's the unvarnished truth. What? On the show today, the best Sunday show interview I've seen in ages. Nancy Mace did not nudge George Stephanopoulos off his game over the issue of shame. But first, the chaos agenda. That's the headline of a New Yorker piece. But, you know, that doesn't exactly narrow down which prominent politician it is a profile of. Okay. I'll give you a quote by the aforementioned Nancy Mace about the subject. Blank is a fraud. Who could it be? The answer is Matt Gaetz, intimidator of House speakers, liege of Donald Trump, dodger of criminal charges, kingslayer, kingmaker, and a real-life princeling to boot. Dexter Filkins has profiled and examined Matt Gaetz for The New Yorker. Gaetz not so much a tough nut to crack as a dangerous cyclone to dodge, and Dexter Filkins is up next. Hi, I'm here to talk about Surfshark, the VPN. Surfshark. What's a VPN? Well, VPN, of course, stands for Very Porcine Narwhal. No, it doesn't. It doesn't stand for a pig-like unicorn whale, but it is, in fact, versatile, like that animal might be. A VPN is a virtual private network. It's an extremely useful tool. One pretty common way to use it, let's say you're a subscriber to, I'll throw out a brand name, Netflix, and you would like to access the Netflix catalog that they might have in France or the Czech Republic, you can do that. Tis your ability with a VPN. Or what I do is I like a lot of the podcasts that are available on certain national broadcasters prominent in Europe, but you can't always hear them here. But if you were in Europe, if you were in the UK, you could. I use it for that. Paywalls, there is another thing. I'm in favor in general of paying for journalism, and I do. Oh boy, do I. But sometimes you just need to read that third article and you're locked out after a second. With a VPN, you can access it. Plus, think of it like a mask. You don't always want everyone tracking your activity online. And don't think of a mask as you're doing something sneaky or surreptitious. Think of the masks we wore during COVID when it was necessary to do so. It's just about hygiene. The Surfshark VPN provides that service as well. Get Surfshark VPN at surfshark.deals/gist. Enter promo code GIST for 3 extra months for free. You heard me right. 3 extra months for free. That's surfshark.deals/gist. The Defender is a beautiful car, but beauty is, of course, sometimes only skin deep. Not with the Defender. Let's talk about the interior. It's robust. Built with integrity. Yes, it's designed iconically, the exterior. That's what compelled me. My neighbor Jay says, Mike, you see what's on the block? It's a Defender. And I look down the block, and indeed there is. And me and Jay the neighbor and Michelle, we gather around the Defender. We peer in the window. I have to say, I don't want to make this a little too tawdry, but we lust, or perhaps we quell. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. We looked at the cargo capacity, more room for the gear. There's really a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. A new story on Matt Gaetz is out in The New Yorker, is written by the estimable Dexter Filkins, who lately has been turning his sights to domestic politics. He's won Pulitzers for his international reporting. And when it comes to Gaetz, I'll read a sentence from the article. Gaetz is a paradox. He is determined to attack the modern democratic state, but he harbors ambitions that only modern American politics can satisfy. In other words, the burn it all down guy needs the it. He needs the institution to rail against, to give his own existence meaning. It's one of the many interesting wrinkles about this forceful, important, and kind of crazy political figure. Dexter, welcome to The Gist.
God, that's perfect. Thank you.
So I do think we have to, this isn't us indulging in tabloid fare, but we have to lay down some predicates about the character and some of the exploits of Matt Gaetz. So if you were to explain this son of Florida and this son of privilege and this showman and populist, how would you describe his upbringing so that we would, to someone who maybe not, has only seen him on TV and doesn't really know who he is or what he's all about?
Well, just super good question. Another paradox in a way. He comes from the Florida panhandle, and I'm from Florida. I grew up in Cape Canaveral around near the Space Center, and we always refer to the panhandle as Lower Alabama because it's like redneck world. So he's from this really conservative part of the state, but he's not conservative. His life is a testament to that. He describes himself as a libertarian, and like that's the way he's lived his life. So child of privilege, as you say, his dad was a very successful businessman. I think in one of the documents I read, the disclosure documents, his dad was worth $30 million. Mm-hmm. Matt had a reputation like throughout his youth into his adulthood as kind of a bad boy, you know, like and a rich kid.
Right. So 8 speeding tickets, 1 DUI. The cop who dared to issue the DUI winds up getting fired for some reason in the Florida legislature. He, and this is not your reporting, but he apparently had a game where different members would receive points on a sliding scale for having sex with, quote, AIDS interns, lobbyists, and married legislators. Gaetz denied the accusations, as is written many times parenthetically in this article. Matt Gaetz and his father, who was what, president of the Florida Senate?
Yes.
Yes. Daddy Gaetz and Baby Gaetz, they were known as. And Gaetz also, it should be known, is an intelligent person and a high school debate champion, and yes, variously described as very, very smart, someone you want on your team, but also really lazy.
He's really smart. And that's clear when you meet him, as I did. But even if you just watch him, he's super fast on his feet. He can stand up and give an off-the-cuff speech that's really good and really compelling. And he doesn't say or you know or like.
You know, Dexter, that's so true, and no one raises this. And I once did a segment where I timed the speech rate of various talkers, and I knew that Jim Jordan would be fast, and he is. And another person, I said, well, this guy's going to be very fast talker, is Gaetz. And Gaetz does not talk faster than even, say, Mike Lawler, who's a Republican who criticized him. But it's just that his speech has no elements of or of course, like, that he comes across as having a super smooth patter, and maybe to a certain kind of listener, maybe one with a super smooth brain that scans as very intelligent.
Super smart. And it's true. I mean, he was the Florida debate champion, and yeah, Florida's a big state. And one of his, I spoke to somebody who went to high school with, and she said, you know, Matt was always winning an argument with somebody, and maybe it comes out of that, or kind of, maybe it comes because he grew up in a political family. And so he's used to kind of getting on stage and performing, but he's really good. He's really good.
So the other thing he has, and tell me how much of, I guess there are 3 ways to explain this. He aligned himself with Trump and populism at a time when it wasn't apparent that this is what you'd have to do. That seems to be his natural inclination. And in fact, he did a similar thing when it seemed that Adam Putnam had the inside track for the Republican nomination for governor of Florida, but he backed Ron DeSantis. And so the 3 explanations would be, that's just who he is temperamentally. 2, maybe he's so good at seeing where the winds blow that he positioned himself exactly where the electorate was going to be. Or maybe the 3rd part is, you know, he just got lucky.
Yes. I mean, I think the Trump phenomenon, my sense is that he identified with Trump in 2016, but he saw it coming. You know, he saw the train coming and he wanted to jump on it. And then look, if you look at Florida, you know, Florida in 2016 was still majority Democratic registration. And it was, you know, it was kind of a purple state, but it was still a leading Democrat. That is no longer true. Like, that train is gone. You know, it is a Republican state now. And Gates kind of, I think, you know, he felt the rumbles of that train and, like, knew he had to get on it.
Mm-hmm. So I want to, and we'll have to get to the allegations of sexual abuse or sexual, perhaps, crimes. The House investigation is still looking at that. And he told you, you know, I don't have the most stellar legislative record. But in terms of actual accomplishments, not just the ability to get in the news, would someone who is mostly a fan of Matt Gaetz' agenda or what Matt Gaetz says his agenda would be, would that person look at Gaetz and say he's actually been a very good representative for our ideology or our cause?
I think so. I think so. Like, I went to, for instance, a rally in Texas where he spoke for a Republican congressional candidate. And that's interesting aside about Gaetz. He's traveling the country. He doesn't go home to the panhandle every week. But he is tapping into this kind of populist phenomenon, which I think that's the Republican Party today. And, you know, you could say the Republican Party is split, you know, and it's Donald Trump gets 60%. Nikki Haley, who's an old guard Republican, gets 40%. It's split. But that you really feel the energy when you're at a rally like that. You see where the party's going, and it's Donald Trump's party, and it's Matt Gaetz's party, and that's away from, you know, our fathers as Republicans, you know, golfers and bankers, and towards the kind of table banging populism that Trump and Gaetz represent. You know, that's the new wave.
Is it Matt Gaetz's party because he's a skilled communicator, or are there machinations behind the scenes that maybe we don't know about, but you do, that indicate that Gaetz is pretty good at, you know, maneuvering and accruing political power?
Well, I think he's just, I think he's very astute. And I think he, like, as you mentioned, 2018, he jumps, he gets in behind Ron DeSantis, very, very much in the Trump mold. In 2016, he got behind Trump. He feels it. And I think he could see where things were going and he wanted to get behind him. And he has seen that the energy in the party and the Republican Party now is populist. And the old guard, you know, now represented by Nikki Haley, the old guard's getting pushed out.
Yeah. And also, just if we were look at it amorally, he made a bet and it seemed like it was doomed to fail when he challenged and took on McCarthy, but he was right, wasn't he?
Incredible. I mean, when you think about what he accomplished, and you know, it's in a negative way.
Yeah, sense, quote unquote accomplished, right.
Well, yeah. But he only had nine Republicans. So that, you know, the House of Representatives is majority Republican. It's the Republicans that get to elect the speaker. Gaetz only had nine people around him.
Yeah.
Nine Republicans. And yet, with only nine Republicans, the rest of the Republicans hate him. And with only nine Republicans, he was able to take McCarthy down. And he did that by kind of making this very shrewd calculation that the Democrats basically wouldn't save McCarthy because they can't stand McCarthy. But incredibly disruptive. I mean, in a way, he was kind of an arsonist that whole period. Burn it down. But it worked.
Right,
it really
right.
Worked.
Like a guerrilla force, asymmetrical warfare. And as you said, it worked. Now, what did he get out of that besides attention, which is no small thing to him?
You know, that's not much. He got attention. I think I quote somebody in the story as saying he didn't have a plan beyond McCarthy. He wanted to take McCarthy down. And you know, he didn't know what would come next. But heck, you know, he caused some chaos and he'd get on TV a lot and he'd raise a lot of money for himself.
Well, that's the last part. Right. Attention is not just ego gratification. It's in this political atmosphere. You know, time was 20 years ago. You had to kowtow to the party and to political bosses because they controlled fundraising. And now he and Marjorie Taylor Greene are their own brands and they don't need the party. And in fact, the more they fight or position themselves as opposite the party, it's better for their own fundraising and therefore their own power.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's like the hierarchy itself has collapsed. Because so here you have a junior member of the Republican Party basically trashing the speaker, trashing the leader of his own party. And every day after every speech, he would send out a fundraising letter. And he's like literally making millions off of it. And like, man, what does that add up to? You know, that's whatever else it is, it's anarchy. It's chaos.
So why wouldn't he do, and he hasn't so far, why wouldn't he use the same tactics against Mike Johnson?
Super good question. And I don't know the answer. I can tell you what I think, which is that when Gates took down McCarthy, it was so disruptive. And, you know, the United States of America, deeply intertwined in two foreign wars, you know, the world's financial center, did not have a functioning House of Representatives for 3 weeks. It was chaos. It was a nightmare. It was embarrassing. And so Mike Johnson comes in and essentially does exactly what McCarthy did and what Gates was angry at McCarthy for doing, which is compromising with Democrats to pass legislation, to pass a budget, to keep the government functioning. Gates didn't pick up the sword. Mm-hmm. My sense is that that wasn't about principle. It was about, you know, power and tactics, but people had had enough. And I think, so there is no good reason except that, which is, look, I took down the king once. I don't think I can get away with this again.
Right. Or what you said is true about how destabilizing it was for the government. But I wouldn't want the listeners to think, oh, therefore he has compunction or patriotism or believes in a functional government. He's just looking at it from his own perspective. Maybe he says, not so much, it is regrettable that the government couldn't do its job, but something like, I think this act could wear thin. I'm not sure I could get, could have it happen again. I proved it could happen once. Therefore, you know, already called my shot. I pulled off that trick. People are going to get more mad at me. You know, his own calculation was this thing will accrue less attention and more consternation should I try to do it again.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, and that's why Johnson has survived. I don't think Johnson is very popular. He hasn't been very effective. But I mean, how much chaos can we take?
Yeah,
I think Gates sees that.
Mm-hmm. So lest people think, oh, wow, this guy is savvier and smarter and more strategic, he's incredibly incautious. And this brings us to, and we could talk about a number of financial things, but let us talk about the investigation into the allegations that he had sex with an underage girl. How far along was that investigation, did you find out from your reporting?
Well, it's been going on for a couple of years now. The Justice Department took it up, the public integrity section. They looked at Gates very closely. There was a period, now this is late 2020, early 2021, where I think the betting was that Gates was going to be indicted for trafficking a minor for sex. And that certainly was where everything seemed to be going. But it didn't happen. And the Justice Department stopped and said, we're closing the case. They didn't say why. You can speculate as to why. But the House Ethics Committee, which is, you know, essentially this body that, you know, basically polices the members of the House, they are investigating and they're pretty far along. And mm-hmm. So I don't think they're close yet, but they're going over the evidence really, really carefully. And I have to say, there's a lot of evidence.
Is their decision, and am I right, it's entirely bipartisan? It's an equal number of Democrats and Republicans on that committee?
Yeah, yes. And I think that, you know, we just saw in the case of George Santos, basically the worst that can happen, which is that he could get expelled. He's not going to be charged, but he could be expelled from the House if he's found guilty. And
yes.
There's a vote by the House, et cetera.
And also, as you chronicle, the fact that there are a number of Republicans on the committee might not help him. He doesn't have fans within his own caucus, right?
That's right. That's right. I mean, that's the really crazy thing here is that Gates has become certainly one of the most visible, but even arguably one of the most powerful congressmen in America. And he is despised by his own party. He doesn't even deny that.
Does that help or hurt him? Did you become one of the most powerful?
Well, that's the secret, I think. And is that he runs against not just Washington, which politicians have been doing for years. He runs against his own party, and he runs against what, you know, he describes to his, to the voters as like, I'm running against the lobbyists and the corruption and the deep state and all of it, Republican and Democrat. And people love it. Mm-hmm. People love it.
So the charges of having sex with the underage girl, it's all there in your piece. Of course, it's sordid. Basically, it concerns an associate, a friend of Gates's, a minor elected Florida official who himself faces serious charges. So he might flip on Gates. But the evidence is that they would set up assignations, dates through the service called seeking arrangement. And while the arrangement, no one ever texted on a chain, you will exchange money for sex. That is clearly what happened, because gifts were given to women and the women wound up, you know, sleeping with a bunch of guys, Gates and this indicted guy among them. But one of the women wasn't a woman at the time. She was a girl. She was 17 years old. And as you point out, it doesn't matter if she had a fake ID or lied or anything else. All that matters was her actual age. Now, the complications and what you suggest why charges weren't brought by the Justice Department were that that girl is now a porn star or a porn actress or whatever. So that doesn't change anything in terms of facts, but in terms of if you want the sympathetic victim crying, he took my childhood, she's not going to provide that. And the person at the center of the allegations is your classic guy facing charges who's looking to flip on a bigger fish and get out of it. What will the ethics department do if that is the lay of the land? Does that make, I don't know. So some of my questions are, what are the standards of evidence? What do the people you talk to say? What considerations will they take into account? If we could prove everything you report and I just said, do you think it's a no-brainer that the ethics committee will find that action unethical?
I don't know. I think you mentioned the minor elected official in Florida. So it all starts with him. His name is Joel Greenberg. He was the tax collector in Seminole County, which is just outside of Orlando. And he and Gates were really good friends. They were like, you know, party buddies. And so typically, as was described to me, Gates would come into town. And, you know, Orlando is pretty far from the Florida Panhandle, and it's pretty far from Washington. But Gates would come to town for the weekend. Greenberg would, you know, rustle up a bunch of women on one of the websites. Maybe he'd get some ecstasy and some other stuff and like that. And they'd have a good weekend together. And that's kind of how it all started. And then it kind of just got out of control, because what the feds.
I've been talking with Dexter Filkins, the iconic New Yorker writer and reporter, about Congressman Matt Gaetz. Let's call him ironic or iconic too. Let's throw that in there. Pesca Plus subscribers will get to hear all the aspect of Gates and all the takeaways from the interview that you don't even get on the page or apparently in the regular edition of The Gist. What will that cost Pesca Plus subscribers? Well, about the price of an impossible breakfast sandwich and small drip coffee at Starbucks. Not a grandy, not a venti, a small, whatever they call it, tall. The point is, cheap. It's like $8.99 a month. It supports the show. You get more of the show. You don't have to listen to interviews. If you want venti content at a tall price, become a subscriber. Go to subscribe.mikepesca.com. Pesca Plus. You can also subscribe for ad-free versions for just $4.99 a month. And we'll bundle it all for a yearly discount as well. In this age of abundance, the key when it comes to meals is not just to get something in you, it's to get something good, delicious, good for you. Maybe you're a foodie, if you are a real one, you don't like to use that term, but you know going to a great restaurant that you're all excited about, there are reservations, there are bad tables, there's expensive and sometimes disappointing experiences. So let's say that doesn't work out, you try to throw together something from your pantry, or you're not as skilled a cook as maybe some of these great cooks are. Well, there is a service that I've been trying where the meals are delicious and plentiful, and the people making them are experts. It's a collective of cooks who got together to give you a bevy, an abundance, yes, a cornucopia of delights. I had mission-style beef burritos made by Jose Garces, shrimp and smoked andouille sausage, is that it? With charred zucchini, It was charred for me. Isn't that nice? Esther Choi made me Korean flank steak rice bowl and asparagus. Thank you, Esther. Cook Unity is the name of the service. What I love about it is, oh my God, they have, you could say, you know, I am a pescatarian, which I am, but I also eat other things. You could say I don't have soy. Give me choices without dairy. They had here where I live 240 choices. You could order a couple weeks ahead and the meals come cooked, prepared. You just heat them up and they are delicious. The packaging is reusable. They last for a week. It's mostly about the quality and the variety, but every other thing that you think about, like not too much excess packaging, ease of delivery. When you go on the site, couldn't be easier to order. They tell you how many calories. They tell you the nutrition information. I love that. Not eating blind. For instance, the Mediterranean quinoa bowl with shrimp and tzatziki dressing was, you know, it made my heart sing. At 497 grams, only 4 grams of which were saturated fat. What protein? Micronutrient rundown. Just great stuff. Couldn't recommend it enough. Now we get to the price. And this is, I think, the biggest selling point, especially now for Gist listeners. Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to the door. Go to cookunity.com/thegist or enter code THEGIST before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using the code THEGIST or going to cookunity.com/thegist.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
And now the spiel. One of the best interviews I've ever heard on a Sunday show took place Sunday of this week, on this week. There, host George Stephanopoulos, referred to by Donald Trump in a tweet read at the Oscars as George Slopanopoulos, he was, the real Stephanopoulos was, interviewing South Carolina Representative Nancy Mace. Stephanopoulos asked Mace, "You endorsed Donald Trump for president. Judges in two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming a victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we saw?" Mace answered,
"Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that."
It's actually Stephanopoulos tried again to get Mace to make sense of the seeming contradiction of Mace decrying those who deny rape, but then endorsing Donald Trump, a man who denies that he is raped. Mace denied the premise and tried to turn it around on Stephanopoulos.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim. And I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they
It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive. And I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
Mace, 19 times, said the word shame. You're trying to shame me. Women are shamed. Stephanopoulos' attempt to shame her, like rape victims are shamed. And she also spoke at her disgust at being shamed. Mace also, as you heard briefly, articulated a position on the proper way for a rape victim to behave, which is to not make a joke about the money from her settlement after a court found her to be a victim of rape. Now, there is a tiny bit of ambiguity about rape or sexual assault, and you'll hear it brought up. Here's what happened. The first New York jury said that she was sexually assaulted, which means that since the two allegations were that Donald Trump cornered E. Jean Carroll in a Bergdorf Goodman dressing room, digitally penetrated her vagina, and penetrated her vagina with his penis, E. Jean Carroll said, but the jury did not find that he penetrated her with his penis. However, but since the jury found that Trump inserted his fingers into E. Jean Carroll's vagina against her will, that is rape. And the judge even went as far as to say that is substantially rape, that is understood to be rape, not by Nancy Mace, as we will see. I think most newsmen in the business, and I mean newsmen, would back off when a victim of rape said, "You're trying to shame me." They'd allow Nancy Mace's accusation of shame to go unchallenged and quickly change the subject. But Stephanopoulos did not. He pressed on. And Mace could only offer that she didn't believe the verdict because it was a civil verdict and because E. Jean Carroll joked about the rape, that she, Nancy Mace, was being shamed. Mace once again said Stephanopoulos was trying to shame her. Stephanopoulos denied that, asking her to articulate any actual reason why Donald Trump wasn't engaging in the exact behavior she has criticized. Mace answered once again that he was trying to shame her and then said it was sexual abuse. It wasn't actually rape, by the way. She then retreated to,
"I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting."
I tried very hard to see Nancy Mace's line of thinking from her perspective. And now her perspective may have been just, you know, throwing up some smoke screens to try to turn it back on George Stephanopoulos and get him to ask different questions, something like that. But I really tried to give her the best and fairest possible reading of her argument. I think I actually did get somewhere. It goes something like this. "I, Nancy Mace, do endorse Donald Trump. I, Nancy Mace, am also a rape victim. You are asking questions to me which you would not ask another supporter of Donald Trump. And yes, I support Trump. And yes, I have been raped. Does that disqualify me from endorsing Trump? If not, you have to admit I'm being subject to a higher standard, a different standard that a non-rape victim would be held to as a Trump endorser. And in your question, we hear that a rape victim perhaps can endorse Trump or shouldn't be able to endorse Trump as easily as anyone with agency and free will can endorse Trump or any other politician. So that is perhaps some version of shame. I shouldn't be allowed to make decisions like other non-rape victims can make." And perhaps Nancy Mace, were she to go down this line of reasoning, could say something like, "It seems, Mr. Stephanopoulos, that you're asking me to retract or withdraw my endorsement, or at least struggle with the endorsement in a way a non-rape victim wouldn't be asked to do." And that, sir, is a version of shaming. It's quite possible I did a better job of articulating Nancy Mace's position than Nancy Mace did. Maybe Nancy Mace didn't even think that. Take it, Nancy, if you want to go with it. But even if she did, I think I can rebut what she was saying, and the rebuttal lies on the idea of shaming. The reason that it's supposedly shaming is only if there is any actual shame in being a rape victim. If there isn't, then George Stephanopoulos could have said something like, "Actually, I have enormous respect for you going public as you did, but I wonder the effect of your bravery. I wonder if it's diminished if you not just endorse Trump, but say it wasn't really rape, or it wasn't in a criminal court, or it was only in a civil court. As you know, your sexual assault wasn't adjudicated in any court. You said only one person, your mother, knew about it, but I didn't discredit that. The question I'm asking you is, why do you think the message that you gave, which is a message of bravery, that's what you showed, why do you think that's not undercut by Donald Trump's continued mockery and denial of his accusation of rape?" Anyway, the answer would have certainly been something like, "You're shaming me." And the question in an alternative reality philosophy seminar type Sunday show might have been interesting, but it was beyond the point of what we saw. Stephanopoulos in the real interview then moved on to her endorsement of Trump over January 6th, which she once said disqualified Trump from holding office. When asked how she squared those two statements, Mace at least didn't say that there was an attempted shaming going on. She just said that she listened to her voters. Her last words in the interview were,
"But you go ahead and keep shaming women who've been raped. Good luck with that."
And as for Donald Trump, over the weekend at a rally in Rome, Georgia, he called E. Jean Carroll's accusations made up. Today on CNBC, he called her Miss Bergdorf Goodman and said, quote, I have no idea who she is except one thing. I got sued. I got charged. I was given a false accusation and had to post a $91 million bond on a false accusation. And that, people, that is not shaming a rape victim. Follow my logic here, because the court who adjudicated her to be a victim of sexual assault, which the judge later clarified as rape, was only a civil court. And also something about the victim making a joke at some point in her life about the assault disqualifies everyone and everything. Nancy Mace is free to have whatever interpretation of Donald Trump's statements that she would like. A third New York civil jury quite possibly will find those statements to be in further violation of defamation law. That is it for today's show. Corey Warr is the producer of The Gist, and Joel Patterson's the senior producer. Michelle Pasquez is in charge of special projects for Peachfish Productions. The Gist is presented in collaboration with Libsyn's AdvertiseCast. For advertising inquiries, go to advertisecast.com/thegist. Umperu, Jeeperu, Dooperu, and thanks for listening.